Buddha's words on loving kindness. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Thank you.
So we just did the metta chant. A nice thing to ask, you may have asked this before, but especially someone new, is there any questions about anything in that? I've sometimes chanted that for my friends that aren't Buddhists, and I always ask them if there's any questions about it. Because maybe some line is a bit strange or something. No, that's okay. No problem. Okay. Now, maybe to go on with what Doug did, just to give me a little bit of an idea, I'll do something. It might be a little bit strange. Can everyone put their hands up? Okay, now close your eyes. No peeking. Now, if you've meditated for more than 1 year, and you kind of meditate quite often, put your hands down. Okay. If you sort of just starting meditating, but you've been meditating a little while, put your hands down. Okay, and if you're really just starting, you've only meditated a few times or not at all, you put your hands down now as well. Okay, so, and then if it's really, you've never ever meditated, put your hands down now. Okay, everyone can put their hands down. Yeah, good. Great, guys, great. That gives me a good, that's just a quick way, and it's nice when you close your eyes, because I can feel a bit embarrassed about these things myself, so, you know, just to do that in that way, so I get a good idea. So, yeah, thanks for having me here. It's nice. It's nice. Monks spend lots of time by themselves. So it's nice to be reminded that a lot of other people are doing this out in the world. That's really good. So in that same way that I want to say thank you to you, please say thank you to yourselves as well, and sort of congratulate yourselves on doing this. Just doing things like meditation is really good. Like, these are small things you do in the world to make, to be more aware of your mind and just to sort of be a little bit of a better person. Okay? Meditations can be a slow path, and these sorts of things, not just meditation, but just working to be a better person, can be a slow path, but it's really important because it can help in lots of ways. This is often a bit like changing the world in a grassroots way. Okay, you can try and save the world, maybe you could be prime minister or something like that, but if you're just a nice person around you, that's a really big deal. Okay, imagine if everyone in Australia was just 5% nicer tomorrow. Imagine how much better everything would be, and imagine how it would spin in a positive way. Okay, so this is your, that you're going to be that 5%. Meditation and trying to be a good person doesn't make you perfect, but I think that sort of 5%, 10% idea, this is achievable, and that's a big deal. Okay, so thank yourselves and know that you're doing something good just by trying. Often when you meditate, it can be hard to see the things that change. One of the things, I got this off Ajahn Brahm 10 years ago before I was a monk. He often says your nose is too close to your face to see it. About 12 years ago, when I was starting to meditate more earnestly and things like that, I'd just come back from living in Japan. I was with my mum, and I have three sisters. And my sister said one of those types of comments that your siblings will say to you or someone like that, that you just automatically snap back like a comeback, like, I know what to say. And my mum kind of knew I knew what I could say. Like, maybe my sister blamed me for something I didn't do, or, you know, I could have justified myself. And I didn't really think about it, but I just let it go. And afterwards, my mum, I didn't think about it, but my mum said, wow, that was really amazing that you do that. You wouldn't have done that before. Okay? I didn't really realize. I was actually finding it pretty hard putting into practice the things that I was trying to put into practice. It wasn't that easy. But that was really nice that my mum said that, because often you can't see these good things. It's especially true of things like meditation and working on yourself, because the thing that you're seeing is the thing that is changing. Okay? So it's harder, even though all things are like that. I've lived overseas a lot. I don't know if you've ever tried to learn another language, but it's hard, and you always feel like you can't speak the language properly. And then you sometimes you remember actually what it was like a year before when you've been studying, and you realize you've got much better. When meditating, it's even more like that. And just, you know, doing these things, working on yourself, trying to be nicer to other people, try and understand other people's perspectives, for example, and things like that. So give yourselves a pat on the back. What you're doing is really good, guys. So I think we'll just do a bit of a meditation together. I'll speak just for a few minutes about meditation. Now, a few things when I was meditating, I just sort of try and do the meditation a bit like I meditate. So a few of the things I was thinking about today is one of my favorite sayings from Zen Buddhism. This isn't Zen Buddhism. I started out in Japan though, so I've got a little bit of that stuff. And they say, there's talking about taking the backward step. Okay? And that's sort of, sometimes the way Zen speaks, it's always a little bit unclear, so you have to think about it, which can be good. And the way I was thinking about taking the backward step is it's just watching yourself, okay? You just watch your mind. So we're going to sit for half an hour, which if it's your first time, that's quite a long time, you know, so that'll be a bit of a challenge, but you'll be up for it. Remember, you don't have to be really still. If you feel really anxious or something, you're allowed to open your eyes if that's really hard or something like that. Don't worry. It's not a competition of being really strong if it's hard. Like, just go with the flow. But taking that backward step is just sort of watching what your mind's doing. Okay? You don't worry too much. Like, I'll give you instructions about, say, watching your body and maybe watching your breath. And it's just the nature of the mind. I've been a monk for 8 years and I've been meditating for longer than that. But sometimes I think about silly things, or sometimes my mood's not good or something like that. Sometimes you feel very peaceful and it's lovely. But you're just watching that and just seeing it for what it is. So try not to judge yourself too much. If you can't really concentrate your mind or something like that, that's okay. That's what you're learning. You're learning to see that. Sometimes it's hard when you start meditating, because what happens is you start to see what your mind is like. Okay, you're not so lost up in your thoughts and going from one thing to the other. That can be sometimes a little bit confronting. You realize that it's hard to sit. It's usually, for most people, really hard to sit for half an hour and just watch your breath or just watch the feelings in your body. But this is part of the thing. That's not failure. That's success. That's watching and knowing your mind. So you just sort of work towards that knowing. You take the backward step of not being too involved in it. Or when you become involved in it, you just see that and you just gently step back again. Okay? So just go. That will be, if it's your first time, that'll be a little bit clearer when I talk about the instructions about meditation. So, one thing I wanted to stress before we meditate, there'll be some people here that have meditated for a long time. It's okay if you meditate the way you meditate. You don't have to do what I say. Okay? And also, I'll talk in a way and things will get more specific. If you like what I'm doing, say at the beginning, and that makes you feel peaceful, you're allowed to stop. Okay? So if I talk about just feeling relaxed and watching your mind, and that's good enough for you, and that's where you want to be, you can stop as well. I just wanted to talk a little bit as well. Everyone's in chairs, some people are sitting down. Now with meditation as well, remember you can sit any way you want to. You can sit on a chair. When we're monks, we often sit. Well, I've got this attached to me, haven't I?
Of course, can I borrow a pillow?
Yeah. You know, we often sit on a pillow like this. That's good. You can sit like that if you want to. Sometimes you can sit like this even, in stools and things like that. Now, what's important, and I was taught this, being a monk, especially in Thailand, you have to sit on the floor a lot. My body got really sore. So what my friend who's a physio told me, he said often it's better to mix it up even. Okay? You can sometimes sit on a chair, sometimes sit cross-legged. That really helped my body. So that's one little tip I wanted to give you. Okay. So I want everyone to close your eyes. But before you close your eyes, just look at the Buddha statue. This is not any particularly huge religious thing. I just want to look to see how the Buddha's smiling, because that's my little reference for one of the tricks in meditation. That sort of smile, that half smile. So everyone sort of close your eyes. Okay. And if during this meditation at all, if you're getting a little bit stressed out, or even if you just want to do it, I just want to sort of give yourself one of those sort of half smiles, like the Buddha statue's doing, or like, you know, the sort of smile when you're not grinning, but you're just sort of happy and content. Okay, you just give yourself a little bit of a smile and just sit with that for a while. You can think of it as giving yourself a hug or a pat on the back if that's helpful, but I want you just to have that feeling of giving yourself like this half smile. So maybe just try and do that now, like a half smile feeling. Everyone, I want you just to breathe in once. Breathe in. And breathe out. Breathe in. And breathe out. Breathe in breathe out. So just if you need to move your body just to feel comfortable to sit for half an hour, do that now. Feel free to. Your feet are in a comfortable position. So just starting at your head, just going down, just sort of feeling around your head, maybe around your eyebrows and your jaw and your neck. Just feel those parts of your body and see if there's any tension there. Your jaw and your shoulders are really places you can sometimes hold some tension without realizing it. So if you realize that, just breathe in normally, and when you breathe out, just let them out. Maybe you can give them one of those half smiles I'm talking about if they're a bit tight, and just let them go. So keep going down through your chest, your stomach and your lower back. If any of those places are tight, just breathe in, and breathing out, release. Okay, so your buttocks, your legs, down to your knees. If any tension breathing in, just feel and breathe out, relax. Not forgetting your arms and your hands. Breathing in, relax. Last of all, feeling your feet contacting the ground. Feeling any tension, breathe in and relax. I'm just going to do one thing. There's two things I want you to think of. I want you to think of something nice that you did today. Anything, it can be the smallest thing. It can be smiling at someone. It doesn't even have to be today. It can be something you did 10 years ago. It can be something small. Yesterday, when I was walking through the bush on the fire trails, there was a broken bottle, so I moved it off the trail. That's a good thing to do. I can smile at myself for doing that. The older monk I'm living with, I helped him clean his bathroom today. Something like that. Just think of something that you've done that's good, a nice thing. You've come here, that's something you can think of. Something like that. Just think of something like that you've done. One last thing, just think about something you can be grateful for. Just one thing. I'm grateful that there's some air conditioning in here. I think it's pretty good air conditioning, actually. It's nice. I'm grateful that there's people like you that'll come somewhere like this. There's that many people in Armidale to come down here. Anything you can feel grateful for, just think of now in the next few seconds. There's nothing special you need to do now. I just want you to just notice the way things are. The way things are can be the sounds that you're hearing, or probably often the most predominant thing is just the feelings in your body. Your feet touching the ground, your body touching the chair, the feeling of your breathing, anything you can feel. If your mind wanders into thoughts, know that as well. You might be thinking about what you have to do when you go home, what someone said today. Maybe it's just a feeling that's arising. That's okay. Just see it and just come back to the feelings that are in the present moment, the way things are now. Any sounds or feeling or your breathing. So if you want to stop there and just have those, just noticing and coming back to whatever's happening now, that's a good thing to do. If you want to come with me and be more specific, just start to feel the feelings in your body. Okay, so just bring yourself into your body. Whatever the feelings that are arising and changing in your body. And that includes your breath as well. Spend a few minutes knowing our body just the way it is now. Your body might feel good, then maybe there's a pain. Just trying to take that backward step and knowing how your body is. Whatever feelings are arising. If your mind wanders off, that's okay. Just when you realize, you know. And bring it back into the body. Two places that I find helpful to bring it back to are the breath. You can just feel the air coming in and going out. or another place when you're sitting in a chair is the feeling at the soles of your feet is quite a strong feeling and can sort of ground you, so to speak, bring you back. If you're feeling any tension, you can remember that half smile. Just give yourself a half smile, maybe a little bit like the type of half smile you'd have on your face if you're with a friend. Just giving yourself that smile. Not forcing the ease, but just being with the feelings, with that smile, and taking it from there. Feeling those feelings in your body, whatever it is. If you want to just stay feeling those feelings in your body as they come and go, that's a good thing to do. If you want to, you can start bringing attention onto your breath, onto the specific feeling of your body that is the feeling of your breath. And you can just notice that, feeling the breath coming in just in a natural way, coming through your nose, chest, and down into your diaphragm and abdomen. And then going out your abdomen, chest, and then out through your nose. Just notice that feeling of your breath going in and out. If If your mind wanders, that's okay. Just bring it back to the feeling in your breath. You can feel your breath however you want to. If you want to feel it coming in through your nose, through your chest and into your abdomen, that's good. Or if you just end up resting on feeling it in one place, that's good too. Just noticing the breath. No need to make it special. No need to change it. Just watching it how it is. Just knowing the way things are. If the mind wanders, just knowing that and bringing it back gently. So we have about another 15 or 20 minutes. I won't say any more until the end when I ring the bell. Just do that, just this simple practice. Nothing more to do. If you have a peaceful feeling and you're resting in that, that's good. If your mind is wandering or you have some difficulties, that's okay. Just bring it back to the feeling. That's good too. That's knowing. And just bring it back to whatever you're watching, your breath or your body, or just watching the present moment, whatever you notice. Okay, so now we're coming towards the end of the meditation. Just keep your eyes closed. In a few minutes, I'll ring the bell. Sometimes a nice way to finish meditation is just to acknowledge to yourself that you've put in the effort to sit here for half an hour. To understand your mind, just to develop that ability to see what's going on in your mind and actually to see how things are there. Just acknowledging that, seeing that it's a good thing. Sort of like a gift you're giving yourself and a gift to the world. If you want to, a nice way is you can really see it as a gift and give it to someone. Maybe someone that you live with or someone you've lived with. Someone that you sort of want to give a gift of peace to. So you can even sort of think of that person and sort of give them the feeling of peace. Or you can sort of give them the feeling of that half smile that we were talking about, another person. So if you've been watching your breath or something, just bringing yourself back into your body. Noticing the things around you, the sounds, feelings in your body. The feeling of the air. And in a moment I'll ring the bell 3 times and there's no rush to open up your eyes. Okay, well, you're all still here. Good job. Well done. I first started meditating properly over 15 years ago. It was actually Well, it started a little bit before that, but maybe in earnest. It was in South America. I lived a couple of years in Chile, in the north of Chile. I used to be a surfer. Up in the north of Chile, the waves are about as good as Margaret River, but there was no one around. I kind of thought, oh, that'll be a great place, and it was pretty good. But I started to see that maybe a few other things were maybe how you get happier a bit in other ways that maybe are a bit more enduring. I had some good friends that were yoga teachers, and I'd been doing yoga for a while. I started to do things like that. And I asked my yoga teacher when I finished working, I was working as an English teacher, and I asked them, well, I'm going to have some spare time. I want to kind of do something. You know, I was starting to see that doing things like this is sort of what makes you happy. It's not, you don't want to be chasing waves or partying or things like that. It's more what makes you happy is just being sensible. Like some things like, you know, things like exercise and eating well, going to bed, sleeping enough. But also I started to do things like yoga and meditating were really helpful. So I asked her, is there anywhere I can go in Chile? And this is Chile, which is almost 20 years ago. She said, not many places in Chile, but there's like El Zendo. So a small Zen monastery in the mountains in central Chile. So I went there and that was my first meditation teacher. And I was just thinking about that because that was the first proper meditation retreat I did. And the meditation teacher that I ended up knowing for a few years, he said something which I didn't understand, but I understood later. He said, you'll miss the pain. You'll miss the pain. It was Zen style, so we're all seated cross-legged, and I wasn't so used to it, and it was hurting, and it was a bit uncomfortable. But actually, my mind really grabbed hold of that pain and things like that. So often, even just watching the difficulty, actually, when it passed, I realized that it had actually kind of helped me, because it had actually been something that was kind of a strong experience, and I was watching it coming and going and things like that. So it's funny, even things that can be difficult at the beginning can actually be really important. So even if things are a bit hard, that can be really good. Ajahn Chah, who was Ajahn Brahm's teacher, and besides the Zen monks that I have been with, has been the teacher of all the teachers that I've encountered in Thailand as well, or most of them, he used to say, it's all, and probably the best word translation is shit, it's all shit for your mango tree, okay? Or it's all manure for your mango tree. That's not probably the best. I know how to say it in Thai, and it probably might be not quite as strong as the S word, but almost there. Okay, so because it's like that, you can think of it as the manure, okay? It makes your plant grow. Has anyone got a compost bin at home? They're pretty popular now. Yeah, what do you put on your veggie garden? You put compost and you put like chicken droppings and stuff like that. Okay, this stuff's not so nice, but you know how good that makes the soil. I used to grow veggies in Perth. It's a bit better up here in the hills. Like, at least you can put something on top of the clay. The sand down where I used to live was even worse. But, you know, you really got to get that stuff. So this stuff is the stuff that you use, okay? You don't just start off and everything's beautiful and peaceful. Maybe there's the one in a million meditators that's like that. I wasn't one like that, okay? Sometimes you feel really good, but sometimes you have to use those bad things. And they're not really bad things, because that's what you start to discover. It's sort of what I mean by taking that backward step. Often something that's kind of bad, you can sort of, once you sit there and look at it, sometimes you sort of, it's kind of the same, but you've sort of stepped back from it so it's different. It's one of the things that I found most helpful about my practice. It sounds like a small thing, but it can be really, really helpful. So one day you might miss the pain, even if that was hard. Maybe in a couple of years you'll, ah, that was pretty good actually. So, does anyone have any questions, anything at all? There's no questions that are too stupid. It's really, all the questions are good. So anything you want to ask at all.
I'll ask a question.
Great.
What was the defining point of you becoming a Buddhist monk.
A Buddhist monk. Yeah, I don't know. It's not really an a. It wasn't really like an epiphany, if you know what that word means. It was more just gradual. There was maybe a few things, but I guess it's something I'd always thought about. Like, I finished. I went to uni in Perth, and I sort of finished, and I lived overseas. And my lifestyle moved a bit away from what was maybe more normal and stuff like that, more kind of really typical, like just Korea. And I was living overseas teaching English. At the end, I was living in Tasmania. I was a tour guide. And I came back from living in Japan, and that's when I started practicing properly. I used to go to the local Zen temple and would stay... went to stay with some Zen master that was very helpful. And when I came back to Australia, I bought a van and three new surfboards, and I went up and stayed at a place called Red Bluff. I don't know if anyone knows that, up north between, you know that? Up between Carnarvon and Exmouth. It's really good surf. So I was staying there, and it was, you know, just kind of your dream, like 20 or 30 year old surfer place to be. You know, and it was kind of good, but it's just really the same because I was the same person. I was just living in the desert surfing every day. Okay, and then I kind of realized I kind of had a regret about Japan, because when I finished working, I ended up sort of traveling around Japan. And when I came back, I really had the feeling of, why didn't I spend that last 2 months with that Zen master? Why did I just go traveling around? Because I kind of had an intuition that was maybe something a little bit better. So anyway, when I was a tour guide in Tasmania, my boss was really happy to give me the winter off, because no one wants to go on tours in Tasmania in winter. So I wrote a letter to Bodhinyana, because I'd had some association with them, and I asked if I could spend the rains retreat there. And I was really happy when they said yes. I really was, that's good, because I felt like I was sort of doing what I said before, rather than just sort of, like a little bit like what I said when I realized... when I asked my yoga teacher, like, oh, where can I go stay? Like, maybe there's something a little bit more to these things, to becoming happy and helping, also interacting better with other people, than just sort of like chasing waves and stuff like that. That's kind of good. Like, I really was pretty lucky to be a surfer, because it helped me sort of go apart from something in life. I probably wouldn't be a monk if it wasn't for surfing. But you know what I mean? Like, just something. And then when I stayed... ended up, like, when I was a tour guide, spending two winters at Bodhinyana. And the second one, when I came out of the monastery, I really didn't want to leave. Like, I did a few retreats there, like, for sort of, like, 2 weeks silence and stuff like that. And then I was sort of getting a sense of, this stuff's pretty powerful. Like, maybe this is worth giving a shot to for a while. That was sort of probably this time when I really kind of was like, oh, yeah, this is when I'm going to try. This is I'm going to probably try and be a monk. Okay. But it was pretty gradual. I remember when I came back from Japan, one of my friends asked me, are you a Buddhist? And I said to him, I guess so. Because it wasn't really like, you know, Buddhism depends how you approach it, but especially most Westerners, it's kind of like from a feeling of like, oh yeah, I'm kind of meditating every day. I'm kind of doing these things, you know. I stopped drinking, like, you know, a few things. Like, I mean, I don't even think you have, you know, anyway. Like, I did started doing a few things that were kind of a bit like kind of the Buddhist-y things. And then I was like, yeah, well, I can't. Yeah, I am, you know. So, yeah, that was a bit. But that feeling of like that sort of that peace. And it wasn't just for me. I was also noticing that I was relating to other people better. And so I thought, yeah, I'll just give this a go. And then I was sort of still going around. I thought I would travel around a little bit Asia before I became a monk. But I had this kind of bucket list, this kind of Buddhist bucket list. I was going to go back to Japan and go to Sri Lanka and go to see the Himalayas and go to India. But the first stop was Thailand, because I'd been very inspired by Ajahn Brahm and reading Ajahn Chah and other forest masters that I'd met. So I really wanted to go to Thailand, and the first monastery I went to, the abbot said, oh, you've been shaving your head wearing white for a long time, you should just try becoming a novice monk tomorrow. So I had no good reason to say no. I thought, oh well, I'll just give it a shot, see what happens. And that was a bit less than 8 years ago. So, yeah, that was kind of it. But it was really that piece that I saw that made me kind of, yeah, that feeling. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you miss the surfing?
No, it's funny. Like, you know what's really interesting being a monk is because you also see, because you live quite intimately with other monks as well. And it's just interesting because, you know, you talk to them and some things, they just drop off really easily and then other things don't. And I don't know why, because I was pretty obsessed with surfing. That dropped off really easily. Yeah, other things don't. Like, some people, they drop things really easy, other things they don't. And it's really interesting because, yeah, I might not have predicted that, but and it's pretty easy to think about surfing and, you know, it's pretty, I can see why people like it. Have you ever heard of people talk about flow states? This flow of being really involved in something? My theory on thinking about surfing back after being a monk is it's sort of, because surfing, it's like you have to almost be in one of those for that time you're on a wave, especially if you're in one of those sort of tubes and things like that. But you end up trying so hard, going, making yourself cold, driving everywhere, planning your whole life around it. So you, even the best week of my life, I probably stood up on waves for 1 hour maximum in 1 week. It's just crazy. Any analysis of it's crazy. But anyway, somehow my mind saw that and I don't miss it that much. I can really see the negative things in it. Often this is a way, it's sort of a Buddhist technique, or especially for monks when you live such a renunciant life, is you just look at the drawbacks in things. You can do it anything. If you're too obsessed about food, if you're too obsessed about, you know, it can be even useful for if you're thinking about, if you have really strong feelings for a man or a woman, because it can put things in perspective, you know. You know that silly feeling when you're in love and the person's absolutely perfect? You know it's not true, but somehow your mind tells you it is. Anything can be like that. Surfing can be like that. The, you know, the thing you really want to have for dinner can be like that, you know. So you start to sort of see these things. So for some reason, surfing was easy. But not everything is. Yeah.
I know there's a lot of ways people train themselves to meditate, but is there a particular method that you've been exposed to that is different from other ways? Is there a particular way that you have been trained in meditation?
Yeah. So, I mean, they use different techniques when I first started in the Zen tradition. They're not really, most techniques, they sort of teach you something that sort of helps you at the beginning. The first thing they ever taught me was just the breath counting technique, which is something we could have done then. It would have been pretty useful. You count your breaths, and then often you end up letting go of the counting. Okay? That can be a useful thing to do. Just breathing in one, breathing out two. Okay? And then you go up to 10, and then you stop. Okay? There's lots of other techniques in Zen besides that one. Then the teacher I had in Thailand originally was quite broad, and would just teach all sorts of different things, often depending on the student. One of the other things that has been really helpful for me is, have you ever heard of loving kindness meditation? You basically, it's a bit like that half smile little thing I was going on about, but you kind of really develop and rest in that. And for some people that have the right personality, that can be a really primary way of meditating. For some people that have even a different personality, it can be a really good one to do sometimes because they have to work on it. But, you know, that's another technique. So it's an interesting thing. Different teachers, you can get some types of meditation. They really have strong systems, and then others can be really broad. As with a lot of things, I see pros and cons to both approaches. So, yeah. Is there any specific thing that you've come across that you want to bring up with techniques or anything like that? Is there any deeper reason you're asking the question? I mean, just in case there's something you wanted to ask. Yeah.
Look, I'm open to all kinds of meditation, and I suppose I've read about some things, I've experienced some things. I just wondered, out of interest,
yourself
being someone who's devoted themselves to sort of a particular way, I just wondered whether that was a particular way that kind of happened.
Yeah. So it's one thing that I liked about the Ajahn Chah approach is it wasn't overly specific.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's not to take anything away from some systems that can be really, that can really work for some people. I know one of the metaphors, Ajahn Chah had lots of really good metaphors, and he would always say, you can come to town from the north, the east, the south, the west, but it's always to get into town. That's a nice one. That's a nice way to think about it. Also, another nice metaphor is, they've probably all heard this one about digging a well or trying to rub two sticks together to make fire. Sometimes you have to keep digging in the one well, in the one spot, and not keep changing spots. Or if you're kind of like trying to start fire the old-fashioned way with a thing, if you're like, oh, there's no fire here, and you give up, and then you start rubbing again, don't worry about it. You know, you just, sometimes you do have to persevere with one. And of course, that can be difficult because, I mean, even more now than when I started meditating, like, there must be like, there's probably like about 200 meditation apps on the on you can look at now, you know what I mean? And there's probably heaps of good ones. Like, I know the few that my friends use and I've spoken to you about, there's a few that seem really good, but if you try and do 10 at once, it'll be a disaster. You just certainly don't want, probably wouldn't want to do more than one or two, you know what I mean? Especially if you're also doing up, you know what I mean? So this is the trick, and it's good to be aware of these things. So, yeah. It's good as well. Remember, meditation, you're actually training that awareness to be aware of your mind, and that mind that kind of never can get enough, always wants more information, always wondering, oh, maybe I should have that. Oh, this is good, but maybe I could have been a Tibetan monk. What else if I stayed in Japan? You know what I mean? If you think all that stuff too much, you won't get anywhere. But it's like, it's a balance, yeah, I guess. Yeah. Go for it, Bob.
Is there any way, given the gentleman's question, that we could ascertain which one is going to be best for us, or is it just try them all and see which one works?
Yeah, this is hard. This is the difficulty, hey, when you're exposed to so many different things, is that, yeah, I think this is actually just the skill that you're trying to train. And it's not just like maybe techniques, but it's also knowing like what your mind needs at the time. So that's what you're kind of building, this awareness. Like, you know, sometimes you need to push yourself a little bit. You know what I mean? Sometimes you need to just relax and let go. And often, it seems to me at least, the more you do this practice, the better you get at sort of finding your way. It's probably not good to be too rigid on one thing. It's maybe good to have a few different methods. And that seems to be a good way. I know Ajahn Brahm seems to teach like that. Like, he certainly has sort of a specific way. He, you know, tends to teach breath meditation and stuff like that. But he's very happy to talk about other things like metta meditation. And he gives really good instruction in that. I think that sort of breadth is good. And it's easy to think of, like, to want a silver bullet and stuff like that. And I don't know, maybe there is one out there, but, you know, it seems to me you kind of got to, you know, just work with it all and develop these things. Yeah. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Thank you, Ben.
Not really, the answer's kind of, there's no easy answer, at least not that I've found. But yeah. It's often like a good example is, say, a good example of that trying to find balance is working with tiredness, okay? Especially often when you begin meditating, or especially because you're probably busy and you might want to meditate in the morning or something like that, or before bed. Like, often when you're starting out, it's the really good thing is just to get in the habit is, I'll just do 5 minutes, you know? But then when you wake up for 5 minutes, you might just sort of be going to sleep. Now, it's often really, that's a really good example of this, because you want to balance. You don't want to be like getting angry and like fighting yourself out of sleeping, because what's the point? You're just going to make yourself all worked up. You might as well got 5 minutes more sleep if you're just going to get angry at yourself the whole time. But then you don't want to just give in and go completely to sleep, okay? You're sort of just trying to find this balance of like watching your mind and accepting that you're sleepy, but just sort of maybe investigating the sleepy and sort of like, you know, like maybe like surfing sleep, you know, like, yeah, like doing that. A lot of these things, it's just sort of finding this balance. Like, one metaphor that I've used in myself, a lot of this stuff that the more I watched my life, actually what I studied at uni was, I studied physiology and psychology, and it's modern psychology and neuroscience tells us this, like, we're not completely, you think you're in control of what you're doing, but I know when I've become a monk, and I did lots of practice because I'm talkative of not speaking, when I started speaking again, I just watched these words are just flowing out, you know, I've got some control over them, but they're just coming out. I think it's a little bit like, you know when you're a kid and you run down a steep hill? Yeah? You know running down a steep hill? You're kind of in control, but you're not. I really think the whole of life is a bit like this. So you're sort of just training yourself. You know, it's a bit like watching that sleepy mind. Like, you just don't want to fall over. You don't want to either, like, fall over into falling back to sleep or fall over into making yourself just completely miserable or angry. You know, it's finding that balance. And, like, you know, it's hard to say deal with someone who's being belligerent and aggressive, but you've got to kind of find that balance between not completely caving into them probably, but also not becoming aggressive yourself. There's so many of these things, just trying to balance. It's knowing that you're just going to end up falling into habits and that you've had for ages, but you just sort of work with them slowly, running down the mountain. Like, I really feel it's a bit like that. I don't know if that sounds a bit negative, but it's kind of cool. Like, you know, it's kind of fun, you know, running down that hill when you're a kid. Yeah, so I don't know if that helps. I like it. Any more questions, guys? Anything? But it's nice if you ask questions, because then I know it's at least relevant to you, or hopefully relevant to you, what I'm saying.
What do you do when you feel that you're getting some?
No, good. That's great. We got two questions. I'm really happy. No, that's good. Good. We got one after you. Yeah, go for it.
So you said you live on your own a lot. How do you deal with the loneliness side of that thing?
Yeah. So... yeah, you just sort of watch it.
Yeah.
It becomes most pertinent like when you're on a really long retreat,
yeah,
or something like that. Often, like, that, maybe that's a good example of doing these things I was talking to the gentleman about. What I was saying was metta meditation, which is sort of a way we meditate where you sort of have feelings of unconditional love to yourself and to everyone, and you sort of there's quite a few different ways of doing that. And it's actually a good example of this sort of thing, because sometimes at the time, it can really hum along and it feels great. Sometimes it doesn't quite, but maybe during a retreat, you can actually start to do a bit of that. And you sort of, even if it's not, you're kind of only half working, it can start to give you that sort of ease and things like that. And a lot of it is also taking that sort of backward step that I'm talking about. And so you sort of see these things, like maybe you're feeling lonely or a bit like miserable, like, oh, what am I doing, or something like that, and you just sort of, this feeling's still there, but you just watch it as a feeling, because when you get used to just watching your mind a lot, you just see these things come and go. So it's really interesting. There was a really good quote by a man called Ram Dass. He's a pretty famous guy I think he's from the late 60s. He's sort of one of these guys that, I think it was from Harvard or something. I think they were one of those guys that were handing out psychedelics and stuff to the students and doing all these crazy things when all that stuff was happening. And he ended up dropping out. I think Harvard was very happy to give him a giving him some leave to go to India forever because they wanted to get rid of him. And he ended up studying meditation for a long time, and someone asked him, what did you get out of all this time you spent meditating? And he said, I learnt to be kinder to the neurotic that I am. Okay, and that sounds kind of like, what did you do for 20 years? Like, no, that's really, really good. Like, you know, because, okay, you sort of do change, but you sort of don't, and you get to watch these things, you know. So just by watching them and just knowing that they're just something that comes and goes, it's like you take 90% of the sting out of them. So
knowledge,
yeah, you let it go, and it's not like it's all gone, but it's just like you sort of see what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you sort of, it's like when you're getting angry, you're like, oh, I'm getting angry, okay. You know, you can't make it go away, but you know, but then just by acknowledging that and not just totally like running with it, you're running down the mountain, but you're not falling over. So these are the sort of things, these sort of, you get these, sort of like you get all these little tricks together and this sort of way of being that sort of makes these things a bit easier to deal with. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a nice question. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Does that explain it? Is there anything else? Yeah, yeah. Great, I'm really, really stoked we got another one here.
I've been coming to meditation for quite a number of years on and off.
Good.
And I find when I'm here amongst like-minded people,
yeah,
that I can meditate reasonably easy. It's not always easy to switch off completely.
No, no.
But when I try to do it at home, my mind seems to constantly be, oh, I could be doing this, or, oh, that's so-and-so going out. And I get distracted very easily. Have you got any hints where you could help me in that regard?
Yeah, I guess there's... Where do you meditate at home?
Usually in the garden.
Okay, that sounds like a nice place. Yeah. So, two things that come to mind to mention is that's totally understandable. Like, both from, like, you know, if you look at just that sort of very scientific way of the effect of context and environment, you know? Like, you know how you'll just... Sometimes you just, like... It's like when you walk into the kitchen and you feel hungry, you know? These sorts of things. You come here and everyone's been quiet, there's really good vibes, you know? Even just the smell that you're used to here, that's all going to trigger things that are going to help you meditate, okay? So... That's very understandable, okay? So that it might be more difficult in his home is not something that, it's not a problem you've got. It's maybe a problem, but it's not some defect in your practice. It's just very understandable. So maybe there's these sort of these tricks we're talking about, like you can sort of do things. One that a lot of people mention and I've found helpful is just to sort of, if you can sort of, people often talk about a sacred space and things like that. So if you can have a place at home or something, even if it's just a picture or an image or something like that, that sort of really represents a space for you, that can trigger that feeling of peace and meditation, or just that's the spot to meditate at home, that can be helpful for some people. So if you're doing it in your garden, if you're able to create a corner in your garden or something like that, that it's particularly significant, you could put something there, like, you know, like lots of, I have a friend who's a monk, he's a very devotional character, and he carries around, we went wandering around like in New South Wales together, and he carried around, I think it probably weighed half a kilo, at least, like Buddha Rupa like this, you know, but it was good for him because one, it was a sign of devotion. He's like that, he's a real sort of faith character. And he, but it was also like, you know, he put that in his little, these little umbrella tents that we sleep in, and that probably really made him feel like he could meditate, you know, because that was his hook, so to speak. So that can be helpful as well. If it's hard to do that, you can use mental imagery as well. You could think about this place, or you could think about a monastery or a forest or whatever might elicit that feeling. Two things that I did at the beginning was just those simple things like gratitude, thinking of things you're grateful for, or thinking of things that you did well, something you did nice. These are the types of things that can help you have a good feeling, that can help meditation. Another thing maybe to note with these, and I'm not sure if you're doing this, but it's good also not to worry too much about that problem, to know that it's normal, to know that it's not really such a problem, and to know that it's something to work with, because sometimes the worry about the problem can be more than the problem itself, if that makes sense. So just to acknowledge that. I've certainly seen that many times in my practice with things. I'm not sure if that's what is happening for you, but that sometimes can be also worth considering. So, yeah, yeah. Just doing it, you're doing such a good job. Yeah. Is that anything, any more reflections or anything you want to say about that? Yeah.
No, not really. The little area where I go is sort of like just a small area where my husband's got somewhere to sit. And I've got the Buddha statues around and everything. And it's nice to be able to sit there and listen to birds and things.
Yeah, yeah.
but I can't go deep into a meditation like I do here.
Yeah, okay.
I just have to keep practicing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just see what happens. Yeah. You never know. Everything's uncertain. That was one of my favorite things. This is another Ajahn Chah in Thai. It's like, mene, mene, mene. It's like, sort of, it's not sure. It's really good. Like, everything's great. Like, you're sitting in a retreat and you've got another, like, week to left and you just feel depressed and lonely or something and you're like, mene, it's not sure. And it just shows you, it's still not sure yet. But that you're putting the effort and you're going, just know that that's a really good thing. Well done. Yeah. Any more questions? Great.
Do you have like an easy way of like letting go of things? Because like, I know it's really silly, but I'm trying to like get off social media because I think it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
How can I delete it? And it's so silly because you can just delete it, but I just can't. Like,
yeah, that's cool.
I want to just get rid of it. So it's a waste of time just scrolling.
Yeah.
Like, what, do you have any tips on, like you giving up surfing, that would have been hard, like maybe then how to give up something like this? Like,
yeah. Well, a good way to give up surfing is to go somewhere you can't surf. So, these sorts of things. So, no. I mean, that's really good. A really good example is social media. I mean, I know I've been reading a bit more about it. Like, it's basically, I mean, the psychology is just clear. It's like, you want to, like, make yourself more depressed? Yeah, Facebook and Instagram. There's your Twitter. There you go. Use those. Like, you know, the social comparison and stuff. Everyone like presenting this perfect image of themselves. And even if you know it's a load of garbage, your unconscious doesn't, and it's not going to make you feel good. So, but it must be hard because all your friends are on it, and you want to know what they're doing on Friday night and stuff. So yeah, what can you do? Yeah, the thing is, yeah. You can just delete it, but there's it's hard, okay? So yeah, it's a good question this idea of mindfulness, just to know what you're doing, and a little bit like I was saying with surfing, if you can't bring yourself to delete it, it's a bit like I was saying to the lady with surfing, is you can actually know you can look at the kind of the reality of it and watch your mind when it is it, and actually watch afterwards, how does my mind feel after reading that tweet, or how does my Ryan feel after just reading about that thing, and just really know, like investigate it, like investigate it, because it's easy to let go things when you can clearly see the downside of them, you know what I mean? Like, to let go, if you really want to let go, you've got to see the downside of it. So that can be helpful. You can do like more low scale tricks with phones. One of the really good ideas that someone told me is, have you guys ever heard, you know what I mean when I say grayscale? You guys want to help yourselves? Just grayscale your phone now if you can when you get out. So most phones have this thing where you can put it in black and white. These things are designed, because it's your unconscious brain, like they're designed like little bits, like little lollies on a screen. You want to touch them. Everything's flashing and beautiful. The sun, like think about the Google symbol, all those colors and the arrangement. It's just screaming to your unconscious, you know, these parts of your brain that you're not in control of. It's just like, touch me, play with me. This is good. It's like, it's a part of your brain stem. It's like this little cluster of neurons just giving you a hit of dopamine. It's like, the psychologists call it like the useless dopamine. It's the type of thing that distracts you. It's the type of thing that wants to make you multitask everything. You know what I mean? You know when you feel like you really have to do something, and then afterwards you go, why did I do that? I can't even remember what I was doing before and it was important. It's just this kind of loop. It's kind of nice to talk in these sort of neuroscience terms sometimes, but don't have to, because you can just see it clearly in your mind as well, you know? Like, you can just do things. So put your phone in grayscale. Like, try and learn a few like simple hacks to get out of this stuff a little bit like that, you know? And then all those things, in fact, you can still use them. It just all looks a bit ugly, so you don't want to. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. So I don't know if that's it's like maybe a monk shabby answer of how to deal with phones, but yeah. There's other good things you can do, like you can have times for the, you know what I mean? Like maybe have set times when you just turn it off and stuff like that. Yeah, they can be helpful. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm trying to, you can hide it in a different, like, you have to open a folder to see the icon. Yeah, yeah, do all that, like, you know. But yeah, the really cool way is to watch your mind and actually see the drawbacks of these things. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's obviously a bad thing if I'm, like, trying so hard to get rid of it, you know what I mean?
But you know that.
Yeah.
Well done, you're halfway there, hey? You, at least you're acknowledging that. Like, yeah, 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 yeah.
Like, my work is linked to it, because we have, like, a work page, so then that makes it hard to get rid of it, because I need it for work, too.
I was just reading something, like, they're talking about, like, work hours, and how, like, it was a study in America, which is, I don't know if it's a little bit worse there, but they were sort of talking about, like, people, like, professional person is, like, connected to work, something stupid, like 16 hours a day or 15 hours a day, because now you've got these like things in your pocket, so it's like anyone can call you up, you know. It's just, yeah, yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, convenience, yeah, it's convenient. No, it's not, you know. Like, yeah, yeah, lots of stuff, you know. It's like, you know, it's just, yeah, yeah, you think it makes you, yeah, yeah. Lots of silly things monks like doing, like, I like taking cold showers, it makes me feel good. Warm showers are convenient, but if you do it all the time, like the cold shower, oh, you feel so good afterwards, you get all strong and stuff like that. So these sorts of things, sometimes it sounds so crazy, but too much convenience can, you know, say, well, there's this, it's another Thai saying, it's like, yak dem lambak, it means convenient but difficult. Okay, because too much convenience can make life difficult. But yeah, it's just great you can acknowledge it. Well done. Halfway there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's good questions, because actually what, I think we're 8:30, so we're about done. So that's right, isn't it? 8:30? Yeah, yeah, cool. So what I was, because actually what my sort of backup was, like, oh, if they don't ask me any questions, what I was going to talk about is just these kind of useful little kind of tricks. The word, the Buddhist word is in Thai, it's ubai, it's a ubaya. It's actually a word that's used in all Buddhist traditions. I actually think it came into Thailand from Mahayana, not from Theravada, if you know the different lineages. But they could just, like, the modern word hacks, like, you just learn these tricks, like, you know, things to do, like, whether it's grayscale, whether it's giving yourself a nice little half smile to make yourself a bit happier, you know, whether it's thinking of something to be grateful for, just to give yourself a little bit of a boost, or think of something good you did. Like, it's, don't underestimate these little things you do, like little things you do, like, and you know, you can build a lot of momentum just by doing things that are quite simple, you know, just doing a few minutes of meditation every day, you know. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to, you know, maybe one day one of you will be a monk or a nun, but you don't, you can do things like this, these little things, and that can be really helpful, you know. You don't have to, you know what I mean? Don't feel you're not there yet, because these little things you do, that's really helpful. Yeah, yeah. So all these things we've talked about are great, so you ask good questions. It makes me happy. Well done for coming, guys. Thanks a lot.
On behalf of the group, Venerable, thank you very much for your time tonight.
Thanks, Doug.
And we're here 50 weeks of the year, so feel free to come back.
No worries.
I'm sure we'd like to see you back again.
Yeah, yeah, I like that. Yeah, thanks for the good vibes, guys. It's very nice.